response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Hope you're having a great day. Game one of the NBA Finals starts tonight. Knicks, Spurs. We'll talk more about it as we continue to move along. We are talking a lot about our guy, Drake London, who gets his deal done. And now he doesn't have to worry about that. He'll play on his fifth-year option this year. That was already determined. But moving forward, he knows he's been taken care of. But, Mike, we also have news on one particular Falcon now that, again, when this happened, we were like, this is dumb. It should have never happened. But you got to kind of deal with it. And now we get resolution.
Yeah, Athens-Clarke County dropping the charges against Falcons wide receiver Zachariah Branch. You guys remember, he was arrested just the week before the draft in Athens on April 19th on two misdemeanors for allegedly not following a police officer's commands on a sidewalk. And we talked about it at length with the guys from Dog Nation about that. Branch's attorney, Kim Stevens, telling ESPN today that Georgia State prosecutors reviewed the evidence, including the videos, and dismissed the charges. And they said Zach cooperated fully with law enforcement, did not commit a crime. As we said, it was Barney Fife 101. You respect my authority, you know. And it's the kind of stuff which happens. And I always support law enforcement. Growing up in a family of law enforcement, we've seen some crazy stuff the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been nuts. You know,
the one armed lady getting pulled over, and the fact they didn't drop it right there on the spot when the cop comes up to the car and sees you. I saw you with your right hand. She's like, no, don't have one.
No, you didn't.
You know, but anyway, but Zach. Branch, so a great big nothing is now officially a great big nothing.
Okay. And look, this is good news. I love this comment by his attorney. His good name has been restored.
Well, I mean, if, you know, but as silly, because we know what it's like. And look, again, there's good, hardworking law enforcement out there. But, I mean, what this was not that. Okay, this was a cop with an ego trip. And you know, it's whatever he was said, he bruises ego, and then here we go. So in the case of Zachariah Branch, we interviewed the guy, and you and I, just like we talked to Jalen Walker, it's like you're talking to a guy that represents the program the right way. He's such an engaging, sharp guy. Can't wait to see him in a Falcon uniform in the regular season. But this is the last thing you needed on the pre-draft, because anyone outside goes, uh-oh, it's a red flag. And no, we knew, and people around here knew what was what.
Yeah, and it didn't affect it. I mean, I'm glad they had the conviction to go ahead and just still draft him. You know, it was, again, a mistake.
Do you think it had any impact on him falling out of the second round?
Zero. Okay. Mike, I don't think teams thought twice about it. Even though we end up getting him, I don't think the teams that wanted him thought twice about this. Right. All right, good news. And Zachariah, keep it moving, man. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We got a lot more to dive into. Did the Falcons do it backwards? We'll talk about that in about 10 minutes. But right now, let's get to 4th and 1. So, Jim Schwartz was a guy that was allegedly up for the job in Cleveland. Okay, so Stefanski is done, and they're like, okay, we're going to start the interview process. And I don't know if you guys remember this because a lot has happened, but it felt like the Browns couldn't get anybody to commit to the job. And so Schwartz is like, yo, I'm in the building. I'm here. I'm your defensive coordinator. And so he finally did his first interview about being passed over for the Browns head coaching job, who went to, by the way, Todd Monken.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of is what it was. We had a lot of success on defense, and the Browns made a change at head coach, and they passed over me with all the success that we had and the ability that to develop players. Our best players had their best years, all those different things. And that was the decision they made. They wanted to go with an offensive guy. They chose Todd. I'm fine with that. They can make, you know, decisions that they want to make, but they can't expect me to stay on board for that. Anybody that's in any business, you get passed over for a promotion when you've done a really, really good job in your job, and you think you were in line for that promotion. It's, you know, it's time to go. And Todd deserved his own guy. He doesn't, I mean, a forced marriage isn't going to work in the NFL.
He was a head coach, by the way, before with the Detroit Lions, Jim Schwartz. Yep. And he's a guy that's, you know, he's had some run-ins with some other coaches around the league, Sean Payton. He's described as prickly. And yeah, you and I were joking around, I think, a few weeks ago that, no, that would never have worked with Todd Monken and him, because two prickly pairs right there. That's not good. The other thing is, They interviewed 13 people. There was like 9 first stage interviews, 4. Anyway, 13 interviews conducted for the Browns job, by the way.
Nobody wanted it. Can we be honest? Like, seriously, there's no way any organization in the NFL should go through that many guys. It should be like 3.
Right.
Every job should be coveted because there's only 32 of them, but nobody really wanted that job. Meanwhile, Mike, Sean McVay talking about the trade, obviously, that sends one of, if not the best defensive players in the game to the Rams and Jared Verse to the Browns. He talked about Jared Verse and how he handled the news.
What a stud with the way that he handled it. I don't want to say I was surprised, but I was so impressed. And I'm a big fan of his. You guys know that. And I'll wish him the best and watch him do his thing. But we are really excited, you know, with respect to Jared about being able to get this guy. And it's a big deal for us.
Hmm. Poor Jared. Poor Jared Verse.
I saw yesterday, maybe it had to be, where, the private jet. It lands in Cleveland. They're like, Jared Verse, first time in Cleveland. And he gets off and he's shaking hands with everybody. And right. To your point, I kept thinking to myself, he's like, this ain't L.A. I mean, in his head. But you know what? As a player, man, you go and you play, Mike, and, Day-Day brought it up. You're playing for a contract, right? You're playing for that big bag, and hopefully he does well. It's just that it just feels like it sucks when the organization is not going to be right. relevant immediately. Like, and it's going to be a while.
He's a really good guy, too. We got a chance to meet him in Tallahassee. He went to Albany as an upstate New York Albany, and then it was a transfer in the portal to Florida State and took the coaching and really just took huge leaps and bounds and just was a stud. As you know, I wanted him here, but goes in the second round of the Rams. And the only way the Browns, as we said the other day, we're going to do this, they had to have a sweetener in this, and you got to have something for the fans to hang their hat on. But yeah, look, and he can, as Day-Day pointed out, he can still make some loot, but man, I could not think of aesthetically two more more of a dichotomy than Los Angeles to Cleveland.
No doubt. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. It's 4th and 1. Mentioned yesterday Aaron Donald thinking about unretiring and potentially joining the Rams because of the Myles Garrett trade. So they asked Sean McVay.
Uh-huh.
Any truth to this?
Here's what I would tell you guys overall, too, is, Aaron's a guy that I stay really close in touch with, and I know the respect that he has for Miles. Talk to him about the opportunity to be able to bring him on board. If Aaron decides he wants to dust him off at the age of 35, I bet you he could still do it at a pretty high clip.
You know, it's one of those deals where, a guy like Calais Campbell plays until he's like 40s, and he's amazing, and he has an impact everywhere he goes. He's also a leader. Could you, conceivably, Vaughn Miller's continued to play, could you put Aaron Donald out there on a pitch count or knowing it'd be 25 snaps, and he could rip somebody's head off because he's still that dude?
It's a great point you bring up Calais, because it's like, man, when he was here, we were like, you done? He's like, no, I still want to play.
Right, and he could. And he put it this way, he did not embarrass himself. He was more than serviceable.
So it's a good point. Like, that's what it would be, by the way, if Aaron Donald came back. He's not playing every snap. He's playing third long, right? Because he can still get after quarterback.
Right.
But to Mike's point, if you got 65, 70 snaps in a game, he's going to play a quarter of them or, a third of them. I think it's very plausible. What about Myles Garrett? Did he know about this trade before it went down? He finally spoke.
I found out about a week ago that this was even a possibility. And, it was a surprise. It was a bit of excitement, being in L.A., of a lot of roots here and knowing that there's a winning culture and some great teammates and great coaches here. Now, I was definitely looking forward to the opportunity.
About a week ago.
Yeah. So there you go. Mm. And just a matter of coming up with the requisite trade, the goodies for Cleveland. So it was a first, a second the next year, and a third the following year. And then you throw in Jared Verse. Meanwhile, in New Orleans, Alvin Kamara has not been at OTAs.
What's going on?
Well, they're saying he's probably upset about his future. He goes and talks to Rod Walker of the Times-Picayune down in New Orleans. He goes, on my side, I feel no beef, no bad blood. I'm going to do whatever I do every year. I'm going to train and be ready. We'll see what happens. So I guess he's waiting for the mandatory portion of minicamp. Remember, they added Travis Etienne to their lineup.
I'm curious to what they're going to look like, man. I keep looking at that roster and going, okay, they're upgraded.
They had a good draft.
They're upgraded.
Yeah.
But I want to see how it comes together. Hey, obviously the A.J. Brown trade is still a big deal. Everybody's reacting to it. And Devontae Smith, Slim Reaper.
What were you miss most about A.J.?
I mean, just the relationship we had, the brotherhood and things like that. Some things you look back and, we had a good time here. We had a great time here. The things that we did, things we accomplished on the field, off the field, you always cherish those moments.
Brotherhood. He's talking about sharing those moments off the field. Obviously, the camaraderie with A.J. Brown. Nothing bad to say. I think he helped Devontae Smith. But, Mike, technically, he becomes the number one guy now for Philly Devontae Smith does.
Yeah, he's going to be that guy. And we talked about it earlier in the podcast. By the way, Kamara did show up today. That was the first day he showed up, and that's why he said he'll be good to go.
Okay.
Appreciate that in the article. That was not written well by Jim Florio or in Pro Football Talk. And Mike Florio either. As far as the Eagles, does it surprise you that some guys are popping off? Left tackle, Metallica, it was saying that, you know, hey, I'm just – I see where he's coming from. At least this is over.
It's over.
You know, we're waiting for this shoe to drop for basically almost 2.5 seasons. Cooper DeJean said, look, he's the first guy to call me All-Pro Coop and all these other guys. And other dudes said that, you know, he did help them on the defensive side to be better players. So I think just kind of like there's always that soap opera. Remember when McNabb had the soap opera and Terrell Owens and whose side are people on and all that? Well, this is kind of one of those deals. But I think there's got to be a sense of relief. But you're not a better football A.J. Brown, regardless of how you misused him.
No, I don't think so either. They have a, you know, some guys they went out and signed, obviously.
And Mekhi Levin, a lot of pressure, you know, to produce.
Big time. But they've invested in the position, and they feel, you know, obviously they were going to do this. It was just setting themselves up to get it done. But you're right. I think a lot of guys are just relieved it's over. Did you see who's going to be on?
Who's it?
Caleb Williams.
Okay.
First Bears player to appear on the cover of Madden. Madden 27, by the way. And right. And the cover's pretty dope.
So when the Bears were kicking ass in 85, there wasn't a Madden game to be on the cover for.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think about that, and you're going, right. Man, they've had some great Bears. Like,
so sweetness could never be there because they didn't have the game when Walter's career was wrapping up in Chicago.
Nope, it didn't start until the 90s. Urlacher
was never on the cover. Interesting. Okay.
No, because they usually went with
offensive pieces. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I just the cover is him like above, like he's jumping, like that throw he threw in the playoffs, and the city of Chicago, the skyline's kind of behind him. It's kind of dope, but we'll see, man. Caleb Williams, Mike, we said it. I think, you know, he came into his own last year. Can he improve this season? He said, when I received the call from Madden, it was like my childhood dream coming true. Being on the cover of Madden 27 is a full circle moment.
Article in the USA Today, because, you know, the old Madden curse, and I think they've basically, it's kind of been refuted now, because more than 3-1 guys regular seasons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there was a spate of injuries where guys did go down. Sean Alexander, famously for Seattle, got the cover one year. He went down. So there were dudes that had that. But no, the Madden curse is not really a thing.
I don't think so either. I guess there's a deluxe edition cover as well where he's got his hands crossed. And so that's
the last one, Gronkowski was on the cover in 16, then missed 8 games the following year.
Okay.
So I'm just looking, if guys are looking at it.
It's been a minute, right?
Now, Tom Brady. He won his third MVP of the year after being on the cover in 2017 with the Patriots. So I'm just looking at this. Antonio Brown led the NFL in receiving yards. So, I mean, the trend's going the right way for the Madden cover.
All right, man. I can't wait. They improve the game every year. And every time you go, they can't improve this anymore. It's awesome. If you are a gamer. Coming up, did they do it backwards? Some people have argued this. Maybe you're one of them. It's Dukes and Bell.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
That is the number. It's our text line as well. And you can always find us on social media. Coming up, we'll find out what's on Day-Day's mind. And also, you've got to stay tuned to hear more about what Nick Saban had to say in front of Congress today. It is a big deal in regards to not only college football, but college sports. We will dive into that coming up here at 4 o'clock. Should they have done this backwards? Just listen to me. The best player, at least the perceived best player, I don't think it's, you know, I'm not being biased here. We love Drake, but that guy is Bijan Robinson. And I think he's being recognized as much around the league. And so some Falcon fans feel like, look, that's the guy you take care of first. Plus, it costs you less now to do it than waiting, because you're going to wait this year. Then he'll play on his fifth-year option, right? Because that's next year. That's 27 for Bijan. then you can make the decision if you didn't want to pay him. Now, I don't think that happens. I think we get in the next offseason, just like with this, he'll play on his fifth-year option, and they'll get a deal done. But a lot of folks, Mike, are saying, well, why didn't they take care of Bijan first? Isn't that the most important player on your team right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two ways of I mean, you could have you may do it just like that, and they may just take care of him before he even gets to the fifth year. Dimitrov would always take care of the big guys going into the fourth year, it seemed like. Remember that? And that's kind of what Garrett Wilson had. That's why we thought, you know, if we had more cap space last year, we would have done this, and it might have been a little bit cheaper. At the end, it wasn't that much more expensive, you know, to do it the way it happened with Drake getting his deal yesterday. But I mean, to me, it's 6-1, half a dozen. I'm not losing sleep over it. I just assume this, it's a pecking order, who got drafted and when and where, and then Bijan will get his next season. I think at about the same time going into the camp.
Yeah, when I got wind of this, because this is not me. This is people asking, well, why did they take care of Bijan? And this is what they should have done. I'm with Mike on this. Look, I don't feel like you do this before you have to. First of all, this is why this rookie scale has allowed the NFL to be successful. You know, it used to be, and we know this, right? You drafted a guy, and then you paid him up front what you thought the potential was, even if they didn't live up to it. Now it's you earn it, and then I'll get you the bag. So that's what's changed. And for me, I mean, is he going to reset the market? Yes, he is. If he has a monster year, and we expect him to have a monster season, he is going to reset the market, and I'm cool with that. But again, it's not going to be quarterback money. And so when we say that, it's not as if Bijan's going to get $55 million a year. He's still going to be the highest paid running back, and he'll reset the market. But, Mike, it's going to be within reason, and it's not going to hurt the team in a way where you can't go out and still do other things. So I'm agreeing with you. I don't think this is as big of a deal as some people saying, well, they should have done this first. They've done it backwards.
And for those who don't remember, because, again, not like you have a fantasy league for capologists and front office people, but back in April, the Falcons hired Bryce Johnston as senior vice president of football. He was their cap expert, and some of the things I think we're going to see, there'll be some more creativity, and perhaps, you know, he's got a plan. And if you ask, why are they doing it this way, it's probably his plan. You know, to how we'll respond with Ian Cunningham when these guys get their deals. I'm not sweating it. I don't think if you want to turn this into a federal case, Falcon fans, he's going to get his bag next year, Bijan.
Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, A-Chain, right? Mm-hmm. Is Derrick Henry still in there? As one of the
highest
paid
guys? I
think
he's got to be top five. I'll look it up.
And then what? Breece Hall just got his, right? Is that right? So those are the – oh, and Kenneth Walker, who signed with the Chiefs. But again, that was, you know, a free agent move. But bottom line is – fully guaranteed, I think it's still $29 million or $28 million. He is going to get more than all of these guys. And look, Saquon's total value, by the way, when he signed that deal with the Eagles was $41 million. It was total value. And it averages 20 a year. So if what I'm telling you is, okay, so he gets 25 a year. Like, that's what we're talking about. He's going to make more than Saquon did because, one, he's younger, and, again, the production. But at the time when Saquon signed that deal, Mike, everybody thought the running back market was dead, and we now know it's not. And so, and before Saquon, it was Christian McCaffrey's deal with the 49ers, if I remember correctly. And I think he's a year older than Saquon Barkley. I think Christian is. But either way, that's what we're talking about. I don't think it's backwards. I don't think they did it in a fashion in which it's going to hurt the team any way, shape, or form. Mm. Bottom line is, guys, take care of your stars. If you have stars, you take care of them. There was a while where we didn't have stars, okay? There was a while where we didn't have guys that you felt like were going to be on this team long term. We've turned that corner, Mike, and we've drafted guys that are going to help us hopefully get to a Super Bowl.
A guy just hit me up on the text line saying, well, what are we going to do with the quarterback? Well, first things first, he's going to win the job. And, you know, a guy says, what if Tua balls out? You still have the risk of the concussion. The concussion thing is still a concern. It's not like it's stopped being a concern. I don't think Tua's agent would feel this way, but I've always felt if he does well here, he would get a Sam Darnold-type contract that he got in Seattle.
That's what I think.
I don't think it would be the top four or top five. I think it would be a fair contract. I mean, by any guesstimation, this is about what you and I thought it was going to be, right, for Drake London's contract. We said he'll reset the market to a degree. If they had the space, they could have done it at the same time that Garrett Wilson got his contract, same draft class. So it's not a big deal. Now, again, Bijan will get his. Bergeron will get his. The question, if you want to get really into the weeds on the cap, first things first, can we make the playoffs, guys, and we can worry about the cap? As Carl says, it's been a rocket ship to the moon because of the growth of the NFL and all the money they're making. So, you know, barring, like, I mean, the only time the cap went flat or went down was the COVID year because there was no concessions, no ticket sales, everything else. But getting back to us, Jesse Bates. Now, that's a conversation that Ian Cunningham's going to have with Matt Ryan. What are they going to do with Jesse Bates at some point? But
yeah.
But we do, the getting the Cousins thing off the books and getting us back to where we will have cap space. We've been down at the bottom of available cap space the number of years. And for a minute there, Fontenot got us out of the weeds that he inherited, and then we kind of went back in when we had the Matt Ryan's contract that kind of got kicked around, and then the Kirk Cousins deal.
So Darnold's deal, for those who don't remember, was basically 3 years, $100 million. His average annual salary because he's a Super Bowl champion, is about $33.5 million. That's what Mike's talking about. Baker Mayfield, the deal he signed with the Bucks was a $100 million deal, 3 years. So this is where this is kind of at, and I agree with you. Now, it may go up. Let's say it's 115, okay, cost of inflation, whatever. You know, you add some percentages onto that, but that's right. That's when we talk about Tua and God, let's hope one of these guys, and it balls out, maybe both help us win and we get to the playoffs. I don't know how it's going to look. But if that happens, Tua is not going to get $300 million, okay? That's what we're telling you. And I know you're going to be like, well, what if? What if we win a couple of playoff games? What if we go to the Super Bowl? I hear all of that. But I still feel like, Mike, it would be a short deal in which the Falcons could get out of if they wanted to do that. And if not, here's the other part about this. He could walk.
Right. I mean, look, the good news is we'd like to have this conversation where we're talking about winning 10 games or more. Vegas has it at 7.5 over under. And the Tua comes in, kicks ass. Or Penix, eventually, whether he wins the job in camp or wins it over the course of the year, we establish our quarterback. The cheapest option is Penix, because then you're going next year will be year four. See, that's the problem is we're going into year three. We still don't know what Michael Penix is, other than you guys have hopes for what you think Michael Penix Jr. is. The reality is we still have a guy who doesn't have a lot of experience. So year four, and then you'd have year five, you'd pick up that option. So I think for guys that are getting freaky over this, I think you're missing the script. I think you've lost the script. I think we're okay. And I think we've also brought in some folks to help us be on the right side of the cap for years to come, if you look at the way we've assembled the front office.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to say that the previous front office capologist guys didn't know what they were doing. A lot of times you're following the lead of what? Your general manager, and what they want to do with certain players. And when you make these big decisions, Mike, this is the problem. When you get it wrong, I don't care who you are, what organization, you're screwed, okay? And I'll give you the Chiefs as an example. When they invested all that money after Patrick Mahomes' second year and they go to Super Bowl and he wins, and let's just say revisionist history, it looked different. Mahomes is now hurt. Mahomes is not winning games. And you go, wait a minute, we just paid this guy $500 million. All of a sudden, that comes into play. And it's playing itself out even now. They haven't been able to hold on to some of their guys because of Mahomes' salary, and they've already readjusted. But it's not like you're not going to pay him. My point is simply paying guys fairly keeps you on the right track. It's when you overpay that gets you in trouble, and that's with any NFL team.
Right now, guys, again, before we this is before some guys get to dropped off this roster, more contracts are readjusted. Right now, we are right in the middle, 16 of 32 NFL teams as far as cap space.
And to your point, though, we have I can't remember. 15 years, have we been top five in salary cap space?
We've never come in. You think about it, and some of the usual suspects, I mean, famously in the offseason, you know, the Jets always have all that space. It's always teams that never seem to be able to do anything with it. It's interesting, a team which has been jammed up will certainly come out on top. They've been living in cap hell is San Francisco. They've had to make some hard decisions about
right.
49ers are finally coming out.
Some vets.
If Tennessee gets going, they're in a good position if they get to traction with their quarterback. Washington has a lot of cap space moving forward. The Chargers. But these are all teams that had to move on from their older wide receivers and big money contracts and, you know, guys that were just costing them a lot of loot. Same thing goes for the Falcons. And that's why, guys, it's not personal with Julio, but things like a guy asking for a raise when you've given him a five-year deal and it's two and a half years into his contract, he wants an extension because some guy who's not as good as Julio has just reset the market. For all we know, Justin Jefferson could be in his feels right now that Drake London has just surpassed him. You know, things like that happen all the time in the league.
Yeah.
But because Matt, and it wasn't like Matt, and I think sometimes guys don't understand how it works. The only guy they could keep moving to was Matt to restructure. And that's why Matt's contract got so big. And at the end of the time he left, it was a big dead hit. Even though we moved on to the Colts, it's just he was the only place you could ever go for relief to make the moves. You would restructure in a form of a signing bonus to create cap space year after year from the end of Dimitroff into the first year of Fontenot.
Well, and let's be honest, those are the decisions. And you can say now, what did they just say no to Julio?
Well, it's tough when your owner says he's a Falcon for life, and your general manager, you know, moved heaven and earth to get him. So it was kind of like a done. Julio knew he had the leverage.
He did. He did. All right, man, we're coming back. Mike's got some interesting things, by the way. We didn't get to it there, but we were talking about the cover of Madden, and, and you were laying it out.
Because we mentioned the Madden curse because, are you upset about who makes the cover this year? In this case, it's Caleb Williams with the Bears. A lot of guys hit us up on the text line. They all, in capital letters, Mike Vick! Yes, Mike Vick was on the 2004 Madden, and we know he unfortunately got his knee busted up in the preseason game against the Ravens. But for the most part, with a few exceptions like Christian McCaffrey, Sean Alexander, after about 4 or 5 years of curse, it has evened out.
Okay.
And now you're about 60% no curse on the Madden cover since 2000.
That's good.
I mean, you can't say Barry Sanders. Maybe it screwed up the Madden guys because he didn't play. He was on the cover and he retired.
Yeah. That's true. All right, man. And by the way, it's Caleb Williams, Bears quarterback on the cover. All right, we're coming back. What's on Day-Day's mind next?
No, it's...
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up, what did Nick Saban have to say about the state of college football? And Josh Brooks, Georgia's AD, also talking about Georgia's baseball team. We'll get into all of that coming up. NBA playoffs tonight as the finals gets underway. Knicks at Spurs. Spurs are a 4.5-point favorite. It's 8:30 tip tonight. You brought up Scott Foster. Is that going to be a problem tonight, lead official?
Is he? I think it's I just had it on my screen. He's not the lead official tonight, though.
He's not?
No, he's not. But the refs for game one, and we talked about it with Brian Geltzeiler, because how physical are you going to let the Knicks get?
Yeah, I think Scott is. James Capers and Sean Wright other two, right?
I just look. Yep, there I see his. I see that grimace. I see that sourpuss on his face. You're right. So there you go.
Yeah, I only bring that up again, guys. This, I think, unlike, and Brian Geltzeiler mentioned this, unlike the Western Conference final, I think they're going to let him play a little bit. And I think this is going to be a physical series because of the way, the style of the Knicks and the way the Spurs got into Oklahoma City.
Right.
They're going to let this play out. I'm not telling they are not going to call fouls, but I don't think this is going to be ticky-tack stuff. I think they're going to just let them play. And this is going to remind folks who are old enough, like, okay, late 90s into the early 2000s kind of series where guys are getting pushed and there are no calls.
But Scott Foster has got this rep as kind of being like a real hard ass. Yes. I mean, he's that guy. But Foster, James Capers, Sean Wright. Yeah, so there you go. And we talked to our conversation with Brian Geltzeiler about it because they're going to try to get, you know, physical with Wemby, try to, you know, not hack a Wemby, but, you know, give him a little extra physicality when he's in the paint.
And I think they should be allowed to do that. I don't think Wemby should get those calls just based on the fact, well, he's slim or he needs to put on weight. Like, this is the game. This is how we play, and they should be allowed to challenge him that way. And that's what I want to see. If those calls are made early tonight, forget about it.
Right.
Spurs are going to go to the line like 40 times.
Well, the other thing is, and Brian made a great point earlier, is you want to have Wemby kind of have to make a business decision. Am I going with Cat? Am I going to go with Brunson? And how they defend, and basically spacing between those two to kind of create some mismatches. And look, we said it here. I mean, it was when Mike Brown goes, you know what? Karl Anthony Towns, he's going to be the difference in this series for the Hawks. And he was. And then subsequently, you know, Brunson's not like, you know, he's not stepping up and making huge shots. But Ananobi has just been sort of an X factor for them as well.
He killed us. Game six, we're sitting there, I want to say, in the first quarter, he had 17 or 19 points in that game six blowout. And we were like, OG hadn't missed a shot.
Right.
So, I mean, this is not a fluke. This is who he's turned into. And I said it, he's been really good for them all season. I just don't think he gets the credit. The point that was made by Brian was, you take him out of the mix, they have nobody that does what he does. skill set wise, body wise, and he'll be a very important piece. More on the finals coming up. Day-Day, man, what is going on? What's on your mind today?
Hey, man, feeling good. Happy hump day to everybody. And you're right, we're going to get back to the finals here in just a second.
We have to address the elephant in the room, Carl.
No, there's no elephant in the room.
So today, you, Carl was getting some PT.
Yeah.
So we had the podcast today, this little sneak peek behind the curtain. It was Day-Day and I, just two shot. And we're talking to Day-Day. And as we're wrapping things up, I hear his wife. And not to say that your wife's voice sounds like Charlie Brown cartoon, like, but I heard something upstairs, and apparently Day-Day gave or put too much sugar on a kid's French toast or something. What happened here?
Yeah, the 5-year-old wanted some toast with sugar on it. So I gave that to him. I said, all right, listen, I'm going downstairs. I got to get ready to get on my call. And so as that happens, my wife comes in from my other son's swim practice because she took him today. Apparently, the 5-year-old didn't like the amount of sugar I put on his toast and proceeded to put more sugar. So I hear, put all this sugar. You're wasting my sugar. Because she has sugar for her coffee.
Right,
it's her sugar.
Yeah,
and
that's what I heard.
Who used my sugar on the... And I was like, so I text her, and then I was like, hold on, Mike, I got to close this door. And then I yell out, I gave him the sugar.
But the little man kept going with it. So,
there butter on this toast? What are we talking about?
That was strange. I was like, no, son, you got to put the butter on it because it'll let the sugar stick. Nope. I just want the sugar.
Wow.
Okay. All right, man.
And I was like, all right, do you, bro.
Did he eat it?
Yeah. He ate it. Oh, yeah.
Just Day-Day, man, to live in that kind of fearful environment, when he comes home to. No wonder he has all these, no wonder he drives all over Georgia covering high school sports.
who used my sugar? That's funny.
All right. Real quick, guys, want to give a shout out to Darius Costin. Ran into his daughter last night while I was at the Dream Game. His daughter is a Georgia graduate. She's now working on her grad degree at South Carolina, but she's in journalism, and she was covering the Dream Game, and her and one of her friends, they were like, yeah, you sound like you're on radio, and I was like, yeah, 92.9. She was like, oh, my dad listens to this station. Like, I'm in sports because my dad listens to this station. She was like,
nice.
You know, when we were kids, we'd be like, Dad, can you turn on some music? And now we're like, Dad, can you turn on, the sports? So she was, just wanted to show her dad, Darius Costin, and then her name is Micaiah. So just wanted to show them some love because, again, she was at the game last night, and her dad is a big listener. Speaking of the Atlanta Dream, they did get the win, 91-75 over the Connecticut Sun. They improved to 6-2, remained second in the standings, but it was a big night for Alicia Gray and Angel Reese. Alicia Gray and Ryan Howard, they combined for 62 points. Angel Reese, a big night for her, 12 points, 13 rebounds, and she reaches 1,000 career points. So congratulations to the Dream. All right. Back to the finals.
You ain't gonna mention nothing else right there?
Yeah. Oh,
And you were like total fanboy out there with the camera.
No. I had a job to do, and I did my job.
You had a hat on. So when's she coming on the show?
Carl had a hat on that said press on it, right, with his camera. A lot of pictures, a lot of photos.
So for those who are wondering what we're talking about.
When's she coming on the show?
We have been trying to work on getting Angel Reese on the show. So last night I was able to get close enough to send the group text and say, Carl, I am working, and I took the picture
of
Angel.
Is that what that was?
That was me. That was as close as it got.
Working?
Last night. Yes.
Okay. I thought it was a photo shoot. I didn't know you were working. Yeah. But okay, cool.
They're like the 18 photos he sent us.
Full disclosure, I sent it. I sent the same picture to a group of my best friends, our little group chat that we had, and I said, suspicion confirmed.
That's great. But congratulations to the Dream. Seriously.
Yes. All jokes aside. For those that are still not getting the joke, big Angel Reese fan.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Back to the finals. So Stephon Castle, once again, confirming what Mike tries to shame me for in the fact that, like you guys just talked about, this is going to be a physical game.
Flopping?
It's not flopping. It's selling.
I don't really know how to answer that. I sell calls too sometimes. I mean, I can't lie. But it's really just a feel thing, especially in the playoffs. You know, if it's too egregious, the refs aren't gonna bail you out. They're gonna make the two teams, they're gonna make the better team win. So I think just taking it game by game and not trying to put yourself at a disadvantage. I don't really think it's about selling calls or not trying to sell calls to make yourself look a certain type of way.
So there it is, Mike Bell.
They got a problem in the NBA. All around this flopping stuff. The SGA thing, it got comical. I mean, it really did. I mean, like, he's considered the greatest player in the sport right now. I mean, MVPs, etc. It's just, first off, there's just man law. It doesn't pass the eye test. Mm. You know, it's bad enough when LeBron, who's built like a defensive end, can do that. You know, when LeBron does somebody's hand comes up and LeBron does the,
against the Hawks, where I forgot who the foul ended up being on and no one actually touched him.
And it's like that super slow-mo with a, and LeBron just goes, I mean, and it is, yes, selling fouls is part of it. It's just something that did not exist 30 years ago like this. It just didn't. Yes, you may have tried to sell a foul and a guy gets physical with you, but it never was at the level, epidemic levels that we see this nonsense now in the NBA.
Part of the reason is probably, and I don't know, I'm just my suspicion, 30 years ago, selling a foul, you didn't have to use so much motion, body motion, when you actually got.
Back then, somebody actually did put their elbow in your chin. You know, there was teams that were physical. You don't have to go back to the Bad Boys, Carl. I mean, part of the reason why Pat Riley's Knicks couldn't beat the Rockets, they had no shooters. They had to result to piston-like tactics.
Yeah.
You know, it was John Starks missing shots and Patrick clanging stuff, so let's just mug people and keep the scores in the 90s.
Yeah, Anthony Mason and company. Yeah, you're right. Look, I want to see how they call this first game. Maybe it sets the tone for the rest of the series.
Yeah, and Mike, stop saying that I'm teaching the kids bad stuff.
You
by
call
saying
it gamesmanship? I call it shameful.
Gotta sell the call, man. All right, speaking of this series, we're gonna stay with it. Kevin Garnett had some interesting things to say about Wemby being emotional following their win over the Thunder. I kind of disagree with him, but want to hear what you guys have to say about it after this.
Crying in Western Conference Finals. That was too emotional for that to be that was too emotional for me.
It was? He's,
yeah, man. He got four more games to try to get. You got to go to the finals now. Nah, you still got to be even keel right here. And that trophy, that ain't what we, that's cool. Yeah, we beat them, cool. But I got a whole nother sight, and it's up here. It's going to take my energy to run up this hill. I can't be, that's how bad they wanted to beat OKC. You know what I'm saying? But, man, this right here,
Okay. Now, again, Kevin Garnett waits for the final game to be over. Then you can go, everything is possible, back in 2008. But you don't do that when you win the Eastern Conference. You wait till you win the whole thing. But I think, as you say, Carl, just like Michael Jordan getting past the Pistons in the old days, this is going to continue for decades. This is going to be like Rockets and Lakers, you know, or take your Lakers opponents back in the West in the old days. These guys are going to be going at it. Thunder and Spurs will be knocking each other out.
Yeah, look,
but where do you go with Garnett's take on that? He expended too much energy and emotion.
No, just play the first part for me. Just play the first part.
Crying in Western Conference Finals.
Crying in over the Western Conference Finals.
That was too emotional.
Look, KG's right. The goal is not accomplished. It's not. And I understand Wemby feeling like he's finally gotten there. But if they lose this series, then what? Like I get it. The reflection comes after the journey. The journey's not done. And so I'm with KG on this. Look, I'm all about the emotion, but you brought up
that
Mike.
That was too emotional.
Mike didn't cry until he accomplished the goal.
He's got the Larry O'Brien trophy with his dad.
Yes.
You know, then you can cry. There's no crying at the conference finals, I guess Garnett's saying. But Wemby is also a guy that says all the right things and pours his emotion and wears his heart on his sleeve.
I was going to say, Mike, here's the other part about Wemby, and we just got to get used to this. Uh-huh. And this may be for some men or some people, it may be too much. He is an emotional dude. He lost to Chet Holmgren in the 19 and under. And cried on the court when he didn't get the MVP award. So this isn't new. Like, this is who he is. So, Mike, we got to get used to, like, him just being emotional about stuff. But I'm with KG on this, man.
That was too emotional.
You can't do that in the Western Conference Finals.
I got to see if KG ever showed emotion when the Celtics won the Conference Finals.
crying
in blank.
Love it. Oh, that's so funny.
But again, KG, for guys that are hitting us up, go, yes, he did say anything is possible, but it was after they won the title.
That was too emotional.
he was very emotional. That was after the job was done.
Yeah. And by the way,
that was like part 18 of the Bill Simmons special on the Celtics, which could have been done in about a week.
But he changed the Celtics when that trade happened. Paul Pierce talks about it. And just a workaholic, man. So big shout out to KG. I love the take because I do think people were like, damn, bro, you crying about this? Yeah. Like, you not finished yet.
Yeah, I mean, I just looked at it like he's young. And I don't think a lot of people expected them to be there yet. So we'll see, though. But hopefully this is something we'll be able to see, to your point, Mike, for years to come, them and the Thunder. All right, and then the last thing on the NBA playoffs, reportedly the 2026 NBA playoffs, most watched in 28 years, averaging 5.3 million viewers per game across ABC, ESPN, NBC, Peacock, and Prime. Video game 7 between the Thunder and Spurs averaged 15.9 million viewers, peaking at 17.7 million viewers. It's the most watched conference finals in 24 years. So NBA, if nothing else, they got the playoff. The playoff situation is working good for them in regards to television.
Right. Star power.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You got a guy in Wemby. This is Adam Silver and the Minions up there in New York's dream to have the New York Knicks taking on Wemby, the international superstar. And for what it's worth, according to Sporting News, Stanley Cup. Now, this is good. It's on ABC, so it's on the national platform. Pretty good. 2.42 million for the that's half, right? That's half of the NBA. To give you an example where the NHL is living.
I'm sorry. I'm just... That too emotional comic.
That was too emotional.
I'm sorry.
That's
Mike.
What's on my mind.
But
guys.
The NHL, man, look, they're going to get good numbers, though. I think overall this series is, if it's like last night, it's going to get great numbers, too.
Mm. Yeah, they're saying, I don't know, man, 2.42, but again, it just shows you, where you're living. That's not great.
Yeah. All right, man, coming up, we got to talk about Nick Saban. What did he say, and where do I disagree with him? It's next.
Crying Western Conference Finals. That was too emotional for.
Yep. Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.